Hello, welcome to the JP Morgan Weekender. Bruce is still in Japan, I guess, for the last week here, maybe enjoying the fruits of the cherry blossoms and probably enjoying more of the fruits of the 153 yen rate and doing a lot of shopping. So today you've got myself here, Joe Lupton, and Mike Hansen joining me from the global team. Before I get going, I just want to kind of point out that, you know, we have this kind of continued strong growth, robust labor markets. All of this has been raising the likelihood of a soft landing in our mind. But at the same time, we've had this kind of sticky inflation. And I think that's something that has opened up a new leg in the way we're thinking about the evolution of the global economy here. Bruce and I did put out a note this week, which many of you will have seen, with an emphasis on this new scenario of a high for long soft landing. That is a world in which rates stay high, but there's sufficient resilience in the economy to tolerate these high rates. And I think we're just becoming more open-minded to that as we see the kind of strong fundamentals continue to come through. I think there are kind of two key points that I would emphasize from this note. The first is simply that being high for long no longer is a sufficient condition for boiling the frog, meaning a recession, right? As the definition of this high for long soft landing scenario says, rates stay high and yet we continue to grow. That's a unique element of the outlook. The other is just that when we look across the probabilities on this, and we put about a 30% probability on this high for long soft landing, combined with the other scenarios of boil the frog with high rates as well, we see about a 75% chance that rates just stay higher than what is currently anticipated. Now, that's being revised as we speak, and we'll dig into this a bit more with Mike. Markets are kind of starting to price in less central bank cuts, but whether that's enough or not certainly remains to be seen here. I think the framework, the way I want to get into this with you, Mike, is just to point out that this high for long scenario, at least the way I see it, has three risks to it. One is around inflation that just stays maybe too hot. And a second is just the market response to this, as we talked about the market repricing. If that feeds back onto a big sell-off in risk markets and ultimately hits growth, that puts high for long soft landing under threat. And then the other is more about the rest of the world with diversity and in macro conditions being in different places around the world. As we get closer to these cuts, the backdrop is different in different countries. Is that going to make things complicated if the Fed is staying, maybe not cutting as much as expected? Is that going to affect the rest of the world? And how does that affect the global economy? So with those risks in mind, Mike, let me start with the inflation side of this. Clearly this week's news was the CPI print. And while we have been looking for sticky elevated inflation, I guess my question is this a little more than even we had expected? And in your mind, what does it do to these kind of probabilities? And frankly, how do you see the probabilities as we've laid them out in this note? Where's your take on this?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. So in terms of the CPI report we got this week for March, obviously came in a bit firmer than expected, right? You've got 4/10 on both the headline and the core. And so you're running at rates that I think are still, a bit uncomfortably high for the Fed. But I think more importantly, Fed officials had looked at the January and February numbers as maybe kind of an aberration, a bit of a one-off, probably a little bit stronger than the underlying trend was. And so, another strong print for March certainly undermines that view. And I think potentially shifts the Fed a little more cautious direction. And obviously that's what's been reflected in market pricing and taking out some of the cuts that we've had. We're down to, fewer than two cuts by year end price for the market right now. In the details, I think what probably stands out is two things, right? Maybe three. One is the thing that's perhaps interesting and not so troubling is that goods prices actually were a bit weaker than we probably thought they were going to be. We've been looking for goods price deflation to fade and maybe go back to something closer to tracking around flat, maybe even slightly up, and it actually came in a little bit softer than expected. But the bigger challenges obviously are on this core services side. And the two pieces that the Fed had been kind of separating out between housing and the super core, both of them have been firmer than expected. Housing's basically kind of moving sideways. kind of 0.4 plus per month. We have been expecting that to be gradually cooling a bit more. And the big one, obviously, is the Supercore, right? The 3 month run rate of that thing is now above 8%. And so that's a really strong signal that you've got some meaningful stickiness yet in services inflation. And that's not just a US story, by the way. I'm sure we'll circle back to this in more detail in a few minutes, right? You've got evidence, I think, in a large number of economies, certainly in Europe, North America, maybe a little bit less in Latin America, that services are remaining, core services remaining very strong, right? And
Right.
that's obviously a challenge for central banks. It is against a backdrop where, if anything, we've become, to your point, a bit more optimistic that, hey, the growth outlook's looking a little bit better. We've been revising that up. And labor markets are still pretty firm in a large number of economies,
Yeah.
including not just the US, but a number of the European economies as well.
Yeah, and let me just push you on this point and just kind of stress test, I guess, some of the kind of probabilities. And as I said, I'm framing this is a bit of a risk to the world where this high for long soft landing scenario is that rates can stay high, but there's enough kind of resilience in the economy. The question simply here is, yeah, we've taken out almost one full hike after this week's surprising hike. Sorry, I keep doing this. One full cut. With this week's surprising inflation report, but the question is, is that enough? I mean, is this really telling us we have this leg on the probability tree, which is just too darn hot, which is a part of the boiling the frog, which is maybe the economy's too hot. If I'm just looking at this, I'm saying three strong prints. I think you put it nicely earlier this week. Two prints make a line, three prints make a trend. And you've got strong growth, labor markets are super strong. Why aren't I just looking at this and saying, you know what? The Fed's not done here. Maybe at minimum, they should not be cutting at all. Maybe they should be even hiking. Is there a counter to that?
I mean, it certainly is a risk, right? And we've been highlighting that, of course. I think it's a not entirely accurate to say labor markets are super, super strong because we have seen some signs of normalization. There's some signs of cooling there, but they haven't cooled a lot. I think that's a fair point, right? And look, I think that there's still some concern that you can look at places, if it's, things like rising rates impacting, perhaps housing a bit further, but I think more importantly on like credit cards and consumer loans, right? There's some sign delinquency rates have picked up. There's some concern, perhaps less in the corporate space, but maybe the smaller business space that could be binding. There's places you can look where there's, still some lingering concern, but conversations you and I have had even earlier today, right? I mean, kind of feels like the things that we were worried that potentially could trigger a recession, which is just eventually that the higher interest rates, the tighter credit conditions, those with a, I guess a very long and variable lag would eventually bite, feels a little less likely now, right? It's not out of the picture, but it doesn't feel nearly as concerning as it once was. And so, if we think about kind of the big picture, what's the likelihood of some sort of a soft landing versus some sort of a recession? We've now put that at 55 and soft landing and 45 at recession, and I'd be willing to nudge that soft landing up even a little bit more myself. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting. And this is where I think you and I maybe will get some debate going here because
Right.
I know you want to put more on soft landing. But my problem
But
with the soft
some.
land, yeah, no, I get it. I mean, my problem is that it seems like a lot of things have to go right. It is called Goldilocks for a reason here. And I think it's because on the one hand, we've got inflation, which I'm trying to push you on the point that inflation may be just running too hot, economies may be overheating, things are too darn hot, and you're just going to get a lot less Fed cuts here, and that maybe even hikes, and that will actually break the back of the expansion. But then you rightfully pointed out that, well, we're seeing some kind of tightening in conditions, and I almost wonder as we're taking out Fed cuts here and the feedback to financial conditions and risk markets, that leads me to that second risk I mentioned, the market
Sure.
related risk, which is how if you get a big sell-off in risk markets, does this kind of weigh on the economy? And actually, is that what we're waiting for to break the back of the expansion? Now, I think the counter to that has been that, well, look, we've had a massive repricing of the Fed in the last kind of 6 months or so, and risk
Sure.
markets have been on a one-way ride upward. I would counter that by saying that really, that was a period where we took out a recession from people's expectations. This is a very different period where we're now talking about maybe taking out the cutting cycle, maybe even putting in hikes. That's extreme, I know. But not
as extreme as it once was.
Right, fair enough. But the point is that this is not coming against a backdrop of taking out a recession. And so I think the damage to risk markets could be a bit more as we do a next leg of repricing for the Fed. So it's two-sided on the downside risks. And your Goldilocks scenario is the one in the middle. And either it's high for long, soft landing, or it's just Goldilocks all around. It just seems less likely. What's your
take? I think the difference there is I'm shifting probabilities within the recession scenario, right? In the sense that, first of all, I'm now thinking the likelihood of slipping into recession if the Fed continues to cut more or less the way the market is pricing, and we certainly have in our forecast, not as high as we once thought it was, right? On the other hand, if we are in a different world, in a world in which inflation doesn't come down much at all, labor markets don't really cool. We are looking for some cooling labor markets going forward. We're not looking for the crash. We're looking for the cool. So we're in a world in which kind of just things perpetuate at, 300,000 on payrolls or 250, whatever you want to pick. And inflation's running, 3/10 a month or stronger. So you're printing, 3%, 3 handles on your year ago inflation before long, as far as I can see. Then I think you're in a different world. And that is a world in which the market will have to reprice. And that's a world in which it may or may not be consistent with ultimately getting this higher for longer soft landing. It is a world in which there is, I think, more elevated risk relative to a world in which the Fed is cutting, maybe not cutting enough to preclude a recession, which is, I think, kind of how we look. At least that's always been my reading of the wait for it scenario, right? The wait for it scenario wasn't that the Fed wasn't going to cut. Maybe now it is. But it had always been that it was too late to offset the damage, right? Yeah. And if that's the conception, I think some people still, maybe a lot fewer, but some people are still worried about that. I think the odds of that has gone down materially. I do think the odds of inflation running stronger in general has gone up. It's an interesting question because if I'm not mistaken, we are thinking the odds of inflation being strong but still getting a soft landing are higher than the odds of inflation being strong, but we get a recession. I'm not sure I would have that relative weight. That's an interesting question.
I definitely agree with that. Let me ask you before we move to the rest of the world, because I asked Bruce this a few times on this call, where do you think inflation needs to be for the Fed to not be cutting here? And where do you think inflation would need to be for the Fed to actually start hiking here? And you can put the context matters, sure, and growth matters. Right. You can put that on there as well if you want, but I just want to get the kind of framework you have in mind here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the gray area for the Fed is in this 250 to 3% range. And so it very much depends on what's happening with the labor market and financial conditions and all the sort of other stuff, right? So I think the way in which I'm reading kind of the Fed communication over the last several months is if we can get to 250 by the June or July meeting on the year ago run rate, and it looks like that's not just kind of going to be a one-off, we're printing kind of, 0.2s or even sub-0.2s on a monthly basis so that we're kind of comfortable this is converging towards two, then they can certainly cut. And in particular, they can cut in the labor market strong because Powell's kind of set that up as their criteria, right? They're not going to worry about the labor market in the near term. I think the labor market eventually has to come back into this discussion of how much they can cut, how quickly they can cut, but maybe not for the first one or two or even three moves, right? I think as you move above 250, it's harder to make a case for cutting. It's more likely that you're going to be on hold. And then I think you and I have had a similar view on this. Really, 3% is a level at which if you're persisting at 3% or above, it's very difficult. I mean, I think that they could roll it forward for a time and say, well, we're still optimistic, we're still hopeful, blah, blah, blah.
That's an important point that Bruce pushes, which is time matters here. I think that's where we differ, which is I think if we're sitting here in the fall of next year, and it feels like we're just stuck at 3%.
Fall of next year?
No, this year.
This year.
I think you could get cuts as early as December. Hikes. I'll get this right one of these times. Right. Hikes as early as December.
You and I agree on that, right? So I think what's different there is I think there's some people who think it's possible you get hikes even as early as September, right? I was talking with some folks in the sales force who was like, you know, at the rate we're going, you should be talking about hikes in the summer and actually implementing by sometime in the third quarter. And that does feel a little early to me. Not impossible, but I think actually things have to be materially worse, right? You start printing 0.5s on inflation, then yes, be talking about hikes then. I think that the process, I think there's two things, and we've talked about this before. First of all, the process of turning that ship around, I think, is going to take several meetings, right? And so I think you're really looking at fourth quarter, the absolute earliest you can get hikes in. But then secondly, merely the fact that the Fed is starting to talk about hikes is almost certainly going to bring about the scenario you've been alluding to, which is a meaningful shift in risk assessment, a material shift in financial conditions. That's going to increase the downside risk to the economy, all else being equal, right?
So I agree with that. Let's just turn quickly to the diversity risk point, which is just, are we getting closer to a point where everyone's starting these easing cycles and it could be a bit more staggered than we had thought, and that the run up in rates, which was driven by a very broad global macro factor, that things are becoming much more diversified. And the question with the right now is the Fed effect kind of spilling over to other central banks, or are they going to chart their own course? And is this going to cause some problems? ECB was up this week. That's probably, in my opinion, the bank that would probably the least vulnerable to these spillovers. But how did they respond? How did they respond to this?
Well, they responded by saying they're not Fed dependent, right? They're data dependent. I mean, that was, I think, one of the key headlines out of that discussion.
To which I would just say, like, if currency is a part of that data set, I think they should be a little dependent.
Right. So there's two. So I think the interesting thing here is there's kind of two channels from my perspective that are relevant to thinking about this. One, I guess they're both kind of exchange rate channels, effectively. One is, what does it mean for, I think this is most relevant for EM and less so for like the ECB. What does it mean for relative interest rate differentials and things like capital flows, right? What does it mean for FX stability? And there are central banks for whom that's something that they care a lot more about than others. I think, again, more in the EM space than the DM space, but, you know, maybe Bank of Canada is in that situation, right? The other is, of course, if you are thinking that there's been some inflation spillovers, in the sense that there's still some common themes in sticky services inflation. Certainly, we're seeing that in the data. Maybe it's just a consequence of where we are, even with some variation across countries. The stage of the post-pandemic reopening dynamic is one that has some broad similarity in firm services inflation. Then that creates a challenge because you've got central banks that otherwise are seeing, as like in the case of Europe, maybe at best mediocre growth outlooks, right? As they're kind of trading these things off, and they're kind of hoping that will help bring inflation down, right? So they're kind of caught in between a rock and a hard place there, it seems to me, right?
I mean, I think, first of all, I would just say most of these central banks have their own kind of high inflation to worry about. So the US is, I mean, we've seen that, as you mentioned already, that sticky service sector inflation is a broad-based global phenomenon. It's probably giving some pause everywhere in the world. But I do think, to the extent there are central banks that want to get moving, you know, the ones that are going to be more susceptible to the Fed are going to be your smaller open economies. So no surprise, your Scandies. And Bank of Canada, by the way, is one that held this week. And arguably could have been easing if you look at their contracting payrolls and inflation coming down. So maybe there's some kind of Fed linkage there.
Yeah, we
You
can talk
have
about that in a second.
what's
Go ahead.
that?
We can talk about that more in a second, because I think you have a stronger view on that than I do. I mean, I just think that the Bank of Canada has been signaling kind of a hawkish position despite weakness in the economy, because I think they're just not, A, they're an inflation target, central bank not a dual mandate, obviously, but B, I think they've just, like the Fed, they've been concerned that inflation coming down may not be durable or may not be sustained just yet.
That's definitely a fair point. I don't know. I think contracting job growth is something to worry about. And you've just seen broader slowing in real activity there that I think makes the case them. But this is my point, that I do think there's more of a sensitivity to the Fed. I think anyone that's kind of got these currency sensitivities, I think Ueda in Japan with 153, I mentioned earlier, they're going to be a little bit sensitive to
Across
this.
Asia, it seems that those central banks
And
are whether it's
PBOC, yeah.
whether it's currency directly or the implications for capital flows. I mean, I think Asia, remember, Asia has seen less of a rise in inflation, and so they've seen less of a move on the central bank side, right?
So I think there are going to be and I'm going to kind of just wrap it up here. I think there are going to be implications of this. And the risk that I talk about is if you have domestic conditions that are kind of saying, hey, we're ready to start cutting here, but you've got this Fed over there that is sharp. You know, the US is just so far ahead of everyone else in the cycle, right? So you've got this diversity in where we are in the cycle. And if that is causing central banks to stay tight longer, that means overall global monetary policy stays tighter than it probably should be. And I think that's maybe something to worry about. Maybe it's a little wonky to think about it that way, but it's certainly one of the three risks that I've been kind of flagging here on this high for long soft landing. So let's kind of just wrap it up there. You know, next week we are getting some important data. We get the retail sales report from the US. That's on Monday. I think we're looking for 3/10 on the headline, 5/10 on the control number, which is going to be a reminder yet again that, you know, the US consumer is doing quite well. And that's consistent with our card data. So we'll see if that tracks right. We also get China and we get first quarter GDP, and we're looking for a very strong 6.6% there, 7/10 on the IP numbers. I think we have a mindset that China's a little more unhealthy and imbalanced than what that Q1 number is gonna print. And it's a lot of policy juice going through the system that'll fade later this year. But for now, things are looking fairly strong. So with that, thank you all for joining us and look forward to catching up next week on the JP Morgan Weekender.